embarrassing to them, not to me.
But this
and
is
the constituency that I'm representing.
Please.
Continue, and I'm not pulling. Continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I'll not go back to the point that I've registered. I think it's registered already. Chair, mine is with regards to the presentation that of ODHC has made. And I hope we will really, really register what I want to, not to be distorted, what I want to read. It's with regards to your first page of your presentation that is there. I noticed that we have listed four countries in the Western. But my question is that you raised that in the Act does not cover criminal offences. Mine, I just want to find out from you that whether those countries act does not cover as our department that raised that they are this current deal that's in front of us covers wide range, and as well as does it include private and public sector, so that you should not be limited. You know, sometimes research can be, it depends on what you want to achieve in your research. We are responsible lawmakers. We don't want to be narrowed and be tunneled to certain information, so that we can have balance on both, because of, as much as we know that Constitution Section 836 also has says every individual public citizen has a right, but also there's a limitation as well. So we are looking at this bill in based on that section that speaks to that. That's why it's important that I think Section 36 of the Constitution under the Bill of Rights, that I'm raising that, if you can clarify it to me, because up there it says this bill, the department, I'm not sure you're referring to the department, it says it's retrogressive, it's based on insufficient reflection of the both international. But yourself on your research is also, you have only four countries, but you point that the department is insufficient international. Does it not show that to you that basically international world as well, they don't have such a deal? We, South Africa has been progressive and being innovative to try to balance, and also taking care of the constitution that says that they don't infringe in the citizen rights that is based on the constitution. I just want to check on those two. But with me regarding to the issue of saying the issue of good faith and also the land deal, I'm thinking that the explanation that the department has raised is sufficient, but if you think this one can be addressed, we'll be able to raise what special reservation that I'm having. To me, I think it's very important that once we want to protect, I think this bill seeks to protect the people that once, as much as one member, let me put it in this way. The Honorable Mokwele raises is 0.1% that is not find themselves that there are malicious issues, or the companies find that the disclosures are not correct. That we want to also protect the 0.1. Or even to ensure that no one commit or tempted to be able to fall into the trap. That's why I think that bill wants to address that issue, that says that to criminalize the issues that you know that falsely, intentionally wants to deal with the integrity of the individual, integrity of the company, because if it can be done on the individual, it can be done on the company as well. For the company to recover itself from such malicious damage, it takes long, and also it is also responsible to ensure that it will, the international investors, even the local business people, when they want to go to business, looking into this matter, that how we protect them. I think this law needs to cover, this bill cover both the us individual and even the company that will be able to do that. Thank you, Chair.
I'm going to give the Corruption Watch 5 minutes and give them the another presenter 5 minutes, then come to the department.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll just start very briefly on the false disclosures. I think we need to, and I know there are questions around what is the responsibility of us as Corruption Watch, for example, when somebody comes to us with information. I think the same would apply to any media houses. We need to differentiate between information that emanates from a whistleblower that reaches some sort of publication, right? So a newspaper or Corruption Watch that uses our channel to publish it. We, as the publisher of that information, have a responsibility to report fairly. We need to investigate a matter. So we would never just take information from a whistleblower and publish it without interrogating that information, without conducting an investigation, because then we would be liable to defamation. We need to report truthfully and in the public interest, and the same goes with any media houses. So we need to not criminalize the information that is being imparted from a whistleblower to a media house or to an organization like ODAC or Corruption Watch, who can then publish it. What is the concern here is publication of information that could be defamatory to any person or any institution. How does that information become defamatory? When it is in the public eye, and that is through newspapers. And we have mechanisms, right? The Press Council, Broadcasting Complaints Commission, that are state institutions set up to deal with those kinds of defamatory allegations. And I feel that we are criminalizing somebody for reporting to that institution rather than saying, let's rely on what's currently in place on journalistic responsibility, the ways in which media houses are overseen and how they are supposed to report responsibly. So we really need to make that differentiation around what is the aim of us having this criminalized versus what are we trying to do here. So that's the first point. I think, you know, the same goes with issues of national security. There are other types of legislation that have been put into place to deal with disclosures around national security. And we need to really look at whether we are using a nuclear bomb to kind of address a very small concern rather than take a contextualized piecemeal approach to this, right? The second is in relation to what I said earlier around disclosures in 9A, which is of a criminal offense or substantial contravention of the law, and some of the examples that were given of 10-day irregularities. So really what I'm trying to say here in making the submissions on 9A is that most of the information that comes to us, for example, is around 10-day irregularities. So those are not disclosures of criminal offenses. And then the question arises, does a 10-day irregularity issue constitute a substantial contravention of the law of a serious nature enough to justify the alleged breach of confidentiality? And it's not clear. And the point is that it's not clear. And that's why, even if you look at disclosures of criminal offenses, would an employee know that a criminal offense is created in the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act or the Prevention of Organized Crime legislation? Those are criminal offenses related to corruption, right? But does it apply to an employment setting where I think mainly you would have supply chain issues, 10-day irregularities? And so we've just got to look at what are we aiming to prevent or to control? What is trying to be disclosed here, and are we allowing it? Even, you know, I think even referring in this legislation to things like financial misconduct by accounting officers as being a criminal offense in the PFMA. You know, if we are going to take an approach that says only disclosure of criminal offenses, it needs to be specified, because I don't think an ordinary person would know what that means. And finally, on the various questions that have been raised in regard to Nshlimulo's contribution on the good faith in Section 90. I think the point that he was trying to raise there was that if somebody makes a disclosure that is not in good faith, it is not protected, and therefore we are going kind of a step too far in then criminalizing it. And I think there was, I just wanted to clarify that. Shmuel was there. Yeah, those are our submissions.
Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. If I can just repeat, and I think it was the member who made the comment, and I hope I have her correctly, it's when you lie, it's easy for people to believe the lies, and then the country ends up in tatters. And she mentioned and pointed to the exact example of weapons of mass destruction and how in that circumstance, because those lies were believed, you know, Iraq, Syria, we can point to the general difficulties, human rights violations and possibly, you know, acts of war. But I'd ask you to take a step back from that. This legislation does not deal with that. So this law is not going to assist in that regard at all, because it doesn't apply to that situation. So if I go out in public and I say the ANC government has weapons of mass destruction, this legislation will not help you. You will not be able to charge me, and you will not be able to lock me up. Right? Because this legislation only applies between employer and employee, no? So I can say whatever, it doesn't help in that regard. So it's not a remedy for that fault. It's not a solution to that problem. To come back to the question of where this kind of legislation comes from, I would draw to your attention the countries that belong to the Whistleblowers International Network, which include Chile, Japan, India, Mexico, Malaysia, Serbia, and Sierra Leone. If they were described as the West, I don't know if they'd agree with you. Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. But what I'm certain of is that there is a broad spectrum of organizations who have written to you and said in their practice, in their jurisdiction, they believe this legislation and this section would create a chilling effect. Now, that is the evidence in front of you. No? So that's what they say. We agree with them completely. Was there protection of this nature before 1994? No. This was only introduced after the Constitution was introduced, which creates the right to freedom of expression, which protects expression in the workplace. Is this an unreasonable and unjustifiable limitation of the right to freedom of expression in the workplace? My attitude is that we should not approach the courts on these issues. My attitude is that this is a matter of politics and should be resolved in these democratic spaces. We should not be running to court to go about this and the Constitution and that. And that's why I'm appealing to you to resolve this in the space, which is the political space, and appropriately where it should be dealt with. Certainly in terms of the Chapter 9s, the Public Service Commission has expressed an interest in this legislation. They want to be the institutional home for the legislation, which is great because we haven't had an institutional home up to now. And it really is, I think, important that there is some kind of home for it. Remember, when we refer to the country,
sorry, Chair, when the presenter there says there was nothing before the democratic constitution, because when we recall 1921, workers' class, workers' strike in South Africa. Part of the things that we're complaining of, a part of the issues that we're talking about, your disclosure of information. So, now, Chair, I don't want to go further into this debate, but I just want you to advise the Honourable the presenter not to go much on politics, because we track these things. That is why we're questioning this type of questions, because we also track these things in terms of our history. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, without really to respect interrupting the presenter, our examples were trying to show you the gravity of lies, not necessarily to say we're not aware that the act, it has to do with the occupational working place. So we understand clearly, ma'am, I think for the record. But we're just trying to show you the gravity of lies at times can be more damaging, and at the end of the day, there's no consequence.
Chairperson, we were aware of this. As a result, I did analyze and say, at Eastern Cape Development Corporation, I was employer and employee. ECDC was my employee. That's why I wanted to say we are aware of the content. And I didn't say, I said, I'm not questioning you. I was explaining the end product of when a person is disseminating the false information about a particular issue. I was not saying I was not saying I'm not aware about this. I even started explaining where I come from as a worker in the Eastern Cape Corporation. So the thing that we are saying, we are not undermining what you are saying to us, but I did ask before 94, because I was saying at that time there was a governance, irrespective of what type of a government was there.
Yes.
So I don't understand when you are trying to reduce my input, because I was not questioning anything for that matter. I did say that I'm not going to have any questions, but I will comment according to the issues that are in front of me.
Thank you, Madam. Noted. Can I continue?
Sure. The question about the four countries which are listed in the first page of our submission, that is not, in fact, our research. That's the research of the South African Law Reform Commission, which we are quoting in order to indicate what the South African Law Reform Commission's position was on the issue. We have deferred to our colleagues internationally in terms of the legislation that they deal with. And, of course, they have gone into quite a bit of detail, and the legislation that they look at there is Namibian, Kenya, Korea, India, the United Kingdom, New Zealand, Australia, Ireland, Ghana, and Serbia. So that is the extent of the research that has been conducted. So I would just clarify that it's not the four countries that are mentioned in the South African law reform document. There was a question specifically about whether the four countries mentioned in the Law Reform Commission deal with a wide range of disclosures and whether they include the private or public sector. It is my general impression that there are a narrower range of disclosures. The South African legislation was particularly progressive in that it addresses a wide range of disclosures. However, I can give you some more information on that and exactly what the situation is. Finally, on the point of the 0.1%, and we need to kind of protect them from themselves by threatening them with being locked up. Indeed, it
would be a concern to anybody who's going to blow the whistle that they might be locked up. And it is, in fact, our argument that they will avoid speaking out because they are concerned at being locked up. The question is really what policy you want to adopt. If the policy you want to adopt is to encourage people to come forward with concerns in the workplace, don't threaten them with being locked up. If, however, you want to stop people from raising those concerns, this section will do that, in our view, as an organization, which has worked in the field for 15 years, giving advice to people on our helpline and working with the Public Service Commission and other government departments in order to assist them to put whistleblowing policies in place. So that is our expert view. All we can do is give you our expert view and tell you that, in our opinion, this will have a chilling effect. I would suggest that there are initiatives, and certainly I think Krishnaidu is leading this out of the presidency, to push back on criminal defamation, which is precisely the issue. Actually, that is really the issue, where you say so-and-so is a thief or a dog or whatever. And up to now, there has been a remedy of criminal defamation. And precisely what the presidency is doing at this point is suggesting that that is unconstitutional and should be removed. And we've welcomed that. This seems to us to run counter to that, and we do not understand what the policy purpose is behind introducing this section. There may be an explanation for that that we do not understand, but it is difficult to see why on the one hand you're going to remove criminal defamation, which would actually deal with the concerns you're talking about, and then introduce a criminal sanction in the workplace, which is actually not, you know, not the main concern. So I think those would be our submissions in this regard. There certainly is, and I would concede there certainly is an international aspect to this legislation, and there are a number of international conventions that we are part of. And it is true that many of them are driven from the north, the global north. However, we have signed up to them and we have ratified them. So it cannot be that we have rejected those policies and those conventions because we have rejected them as the global south. We have embraced them as part of our joining the international community and joining the community of rights and the governance standards that are imposed by those general agreements internationally. So the G20 would be an example of that. I mean, we've certainly, as South Africa, I'm not aware of South Africa stepping away from the G20, for example. But again, that's not my area of specialization, and I may not be aware of initiatives like that. I hope I've dealt with all of the questions. But certainly, if there are questions I haven't dealt with, please do follow up.
Thank you very much. You must, if I can just ask a stupid question. Let's say you are in a government or private sector, somebody accuse you of taking 10 billion, and then the government or private sector take you to court, you defend that, you find that court, this thing is just false, nothing. Can't you sue that person?
Indeed you can, Chair, and you can sue them for defamation. The one thing you can't do is pursue them in terms of this act, because it is an employer-employee relationship that we're looking at. So if I, as Corruption Watch or ODAC, accuse you of being a stooge of whatever, or you've stolen millions and millions of rand, this remedy is not available to you. So this remedy simply does not help you in that situation. And we would suggest that if that is the concern, and it certainly does appear to be a concern, I mean, it was raised in the Justice Portfolio Committee as a concern, then it is a concern that the committee needs to deal with on its own terms in another piece of legislation. And I mean, a Judicial Matters Amendment Bill might be one vehicle for that. But we would argue that it's a misguided attempt to deal with a completely different problem in this legislation.
But this, this criminalization of a whistleblower, what does it mean? Does it not show that if you mislead or doing wrong, you can be criminalized or charged?
So if I am your employee and I make a disclosure to you, and in making that disclosure to you, I lie about Mr. Bassett here, and you investigate that situation, and you find that I have lied to you. Indeed, you can, in terms of this legislation, charge me and have me locked up. My question back to you is, given the state of the prisons, given the state of the backlog in terms of dealing with issues, is it appropriate to lock me up? Would it not be more appropriate to pursue an employment remedy in relation to me and fire me and make sure that every subsequent prospective employer who phones you and asks you for a reference and you say, she lied, we fired her, don't even think about hiring her. And that's in addition to, if I gain some advantage because of that, let's say I got money because of that, the issue of fraud is still available to you. And, in fact, criminal defamation is still available to you, although I would argue should not be. So I'm in agreement with the idea that criminal defamation be scrapped. But as it stands, that is on the books. Now, you know, it is, I think my colleague saying it's a nuclear weapon.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Before I give to the Justice Department, can I give it to the Department now? Thanks.
I wanted to raise something that is very disturbing. The way Open Justice Democracy Advice Center has responded to our question in a very sarcastic way. Really, I'm very disturbed. I think they were here to raise their concern, and when we raised and seek clarity, she responded in a very sarcastic. Just wanted to register that's my real concern on this.
Thank you, sir.
Chair,
I'm
going to ask my colleague to help as well. Just some of the issues. Yes, the bill. And the Act is about protection of the whistleblower, and I think Honourable Mokwele said that's what it is about and that's what the focus is, and she's worried about the direction that we're moving in. But I'd like to reiterate that the Act is about the need to protect whistleblowers. But on the other hand, there's also a need to act responsibly when making disclosures. The Act places a high priority on acting responsibly. Reference was made that very few people will make false disclosures. That's nice, that's comforting, but law is often about regulating for the rotten apples that are there in society, and that's precisely what this bill is about and why Section 9B is there. I can't agree with all honourable members, honourable member Mokwele as well, and others who talked about education. And yes, there is a lot that needs to be done
in about educating the public on this legislation and other legislation, in fact, as well, as part of the constitutional development as it is known. We will certainly take that back to our department, to the component in the department that deals with this. What we would like to do and what we would have done in any event when this bill becomes law, and particularly with reference to Section 9B, is to have a focused media initiative explaining the amendment or the benefits, and using the opportunity to talk about the Act, the principal Act as well, but with specific reference to the Section 9B, to make it clear what is intended and what is not intended. Also on the issue of how do you interact with sister departments, I might have difficulty in responding to that operational issue, but I would like to get back to the Honourable Mokweli on that. Honourable Mplanga asked about, does Clause or Section 9B respond to COSATU's concern? Yes, it was as a result of COSATU's presentation in the Portfolio Committee that provision was tightened up so radically. If there's a need for education, I've covered that. I don't know, maybe Mr. Dupree could talk about what Mr. Michaelides raised, that a protected disclosure made in bad faith doesn't qualify as a protected disclosure, and why is there a need then for a criminal offence. I think we've tried to say throughout today's deliberations why there is a need for such an offence. Mr. Dupree might want to add a bit more there. And then Honourable Mokweli, please assist on the Chapter 9 question. I wasn't too sure what maybe Dupree says it stands.
Mr. Chair, I just want to find out whether Mr. Best wants to address anything before I jump in, but I can cover the remaining questions. As far as public education is concerned, we would like to maybe just mention one other thing to the committee, Mr. Chair, and that is that there are going to happen, or there's two important things that must happen. If we look at the proposed amendment of Section 8, which deals with the disclosure of information to certain bodies, it was up to, or it is still in the Act only, and I think this is where we're working towards answering the question of interaction with Chapter 9 institutions. Up to this stage, it was only the public protector and the Auditor General to whom disclosures could be made. That has now been extended, or it's supposed to extend that, Mr. Chair, to include the South African Human Rights Commission, the Commission for Gender Equality, and also the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities, as well as the Public Service Commission. But you will find one important aspect, Mr. Chair. That provision also makes or provides that the Minister may issue regulations in which other bodies are also assigned to receive protected disclosures. Now, the concern that we have is that, strictly speaking, the bodies mentioned here are mainly focused, or most of their work is focused on the public sector. We don't know, for example, the motor industry, who's the representative body there. So what we're going to do is one of the big exercises that must follow now, and it's going to require extensive consultation. And that is where we would like to also consult with NGOs who, like ODAC and Corruption Watch, who would be able to assist us tremendously in identifying those bodies, is to at some stage go to the Minister and recommend to the Minister that in addition to the bodies mentioned in Section 8, we would like the Minister to also assign specific bodies, especially in the private sector, the Section 8 responsibility in order to receive those disclosures. That is one important aspect. The second important aspect, Mr. Chair, is that although I don't think it was very successful, but when this legislation was originally enacted, it contained the requirement that guidelines must be issued to explain the provisions of the Act, to explain what the Act is about, and the Act also placed the responsibility on employers to ensure that the guidelines are made available to the employees. Now, since the Act is going to be amended, we will have to revise the guidelines. That's also going to take a while, and once again, we would like to rope in, if I may coin the term, colleagues from the NGO sector who would be able to assist us tremendously in beefing up those guidelines. And then I'm actually going to interrupt myself. I want to highlight the third important aspect, and I might be working then in the direction of the important point being missed that false disclosures are not protected disclosures. I want to point out to the committee, and especially specifically addressing the whole education question, insofar as employees are concerned, we have now proposed that an obligation be placed on each and every employer to determine a procedure in his or her workplace according to which an employee may make a protected disclosure to that employer, and that there's an obligation on the employer to inform each and every employee of that procedure. So to a certain extent, that might add another portion to the whole education request or question. And then I would also like to maybe the very first question that was raised relating to the need to protect whistleblowers, and they should feel free to disclose information. And one thing one should never forget about this piece of legislation, Mr. Chair, the success of it actually lies in the implementation thereof by employers. If an employee comes to me and I'm an employer, even if it's a false disclosure and I don't know it, I will investigate it, I will go and talk to that person. I will not necessarily, as an employer, go and lay a criminal complaint. But that's my personal point of view. But I just want to try and emphasize that the importance of the successful implementation of this legislation lies with each and every employer in the country, because the legislation was actually enacted to protect your working environment as the head of the organization or whatever, because corruption and everything is damaging to your business. It takes business away from you. There was mention of false disclosures and freedom of expression. Now, what I would like to point out to the committee is that in 1999, Section 32 of the Constitution required legislation to be enacted to give effect to the access to information. The bill that was introduced in 1999 was called the Open Democracy Bill. That bill contained a chapter dealing with whistleblower protection. The committee said, no, let's take out that chapter in act separate legislation, which eventually became the Protected Disclosures Act. And we ended up in 2010 with the Promotion of Access to Information Act. There was a third piece of legislation that actually flowed from the Open Democracy Bill, and that is the Protection of Personal Information Act, because the Access to Information Act dealt with a few aspects of the protection of your personal information. So what I would like to mention is, for me personally, the origin of this comes from the Open Democracy Bill, which was mandated in terms of Section 32 of the Constitution. And we can debate whether freedom of expression is applicable, and should freedom of expression extend to intentional lies. That is debatable. I just wanted to make that point to the committee, where this piece of legislation came from. false disclosures are not protected disclosures. That is correct. But I think from the beginning, when we pointed out, even during our briefing, Mr. Chair, to the committee that clause, the proposed in Section 9B is controversial, we wanted to indicate, or we tried to indicate to the committee that it is so. False disclosures will not be protected by this piece of legislation. However, the emphasis is not on whether it's not protected. The emphasis is on the responsible manner in which you have to disclose information. The Act doesn't, the Act is drafted in such a manner that you can go anywhere to make your disclosure. You don't have to go to your employer first. You don't have to go to one of the institutions mentioned in Section 8. You can go immediately to the press. Now, the press is another thing, and I don't want to interrupt myself. If you're subject to the press code, all good and well, but we know that social media, there are, I don't know how to coin them, but there are people who are not necessarily subject to the press code, who do get quite substantive media exposure. That is that. What we try to emphasize is the Act places a high emphasis on responsible manner. It only deals with one consequence of a false disclosure, and that is that it's not a disclosure in terms of this Act, and that you cannot then rely on the remedies provided for. But we argue that there are more serious consequences associated with false disclosures, and that is what we try to emphasize with the proposed new Section 9B. Mr. Chair, I think all in all, I think all the issues have been addressed now.
Thank you very much, our presenters and the department. But Honourable Mohapi will just give a thanks, vote of thanks.
Thank you very much. Allow me to profusely apologize for what was displayed before the House. I think many times when we engage robustly, there will always be such moves that are going up. But however, thousand apologies. Chair, allow me to take this opportunity to convey our gratitude to the department, the NGOs. It was more interactive and more informative. We hope and believe it's not going to be a once-off, even when there are pieces of legislation before us. I think on a continuous basis, this is what we must try and intensify, so that we can be able to understand each other better. We hope and believe, working together, we can do more. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, members. I want also thank you for your patience. Thank you very much, our presenters, the department. You can see the official from the office of the minister is here. Thank you very much. Don't tell the minister everything. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.